You're listening to the Empowered Parent Podcast with Ryan and Kayla North, hosted by Chris Turner, a One Big Happy Home production. This podcast equips parents to empower their children and build healthy relationships throughout the home in order to see lasting change and thrive as a family. It's for families of all kinds, especially those who are parenting kids through adoption, foster care, kinship care, or in the process. The Empowered Parent Podcast is a developmentally informed, trauma-sensitive, connected parenting resource. To learn more, visit onebighappyhome.com.
Greetings and welcome to another episode of the Empowered Parent Podcast. Joining me once again are Ryan and Kayla North. Hey guys.
Hey Chris.
Hello Chris.
And also joining us this evening, our friends Carrie Ann and Will Standfest.
Hey.
Hey Chris, how are you doing tonight?
Doing well. So Carrie Ann is actually at the table with us as we record, and Will is joining us through the miracle of technology called the telephone.
The miracle of technology.
It's a digital signal, though.
So. Okay.
I was trying to tell my kids a story the other day, and Libby's our youngest, and she goes, were you talking on one of those phones with the cord? And I was like,
oh my.
I was like, yes. And she goes, from your room, because the cord was really long and it could stretch all the way to the stairs. And I was like, apparently I've told her that story before.
From the story of Tarantino.
She was so sassy about it.
You could shut your little mouth. Yeah. Like, no, let Mom continue talking.
Well, yes, I was on a phone with a cord because that's what I grew up with.
I know we want to talk about something specific, but we could spend half an hour just with that comment.
Just in that comment, right?
Which is why I probably shouldn't. Now,
Oh,
we do have a topic that I would like to discuss.
But yes. Could we just, again, if you're listening to this episode the first time, Will and Carrie Ann are our friends from Minnesota. They have a podcast called The Connected Parenting Minute. And Ms. Carrie Ann, if you want to do your 20-second elevator pitch, that would be great.
Absolutely. We are parents of 8 children, and we've been parenting for over 20 years. And we figured as long as we're going through this, we might as well share with other parents some of the things we've learned along the way, good and bad, and also really encourage parents, because that's our heart, is to help other parents do better than we did.
What do you think about that, Will?
I think that's pretty solid. And I'd let them know, too, that there's a mix of biological, foster, and adoptive kids in there. So we've had the gamut of experiences from FASD to international orphans to kids that were born to us.
Well,
how many teens do y'all have in your house right now? Teens and young adults, since we're talking.
Teens and young adults, it's 6. We've got.
Yeah.
Holy. I couldn't keep track of all the ages. I was like,
5 teens as of the 1st of February.
Oh my gracious me.
So he just turned 13.
Yes.
Oh, my goodness gracious.
Okay.
And then the 20-year-old, we're saying, is still like teens and young adults. So it's 6.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. He's in that young adult.
Technically, 20 is not a teen.
Not a teen.
That's true.
He's not a teen.
There's no teen in the number.
And he's a literal kid. So we'll give him that.
There you go.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Why did that make such a somber tone over this room?
Because I was just thinking about, that's a lot of teenagers.
All at the same time.
Like, we have 4 teens and young adults at our house, and that seems like a lot. And then I'm like, wait, you have more than that. You have 6. Whew. We have 2 preteens, though, so, I mean, you got preteens, too. Never mind.
Okay.
Oh, I have 1, so, yeah.
1.
Because my young adult doesn't live with us currently because, you know,
he's off at college.
Off at college, and the youngest will be a teenager in April. So
you're about to have two teenagers.
Mm-hmm.
And before we move to introduce the topic here, the young adult has a goal or an assist in the game tonight?
He has an assist.
Nice.
On the score sheet.
On the score sheet, yes.
Player.
Our young, so those who don't know, have not heard this before, plays hockey.
Yes, he does.
Okay.
So you may have surmised that since we're talking about teens and young adults, that the topic is going to be revolving around teens and young adults, and you would be correct.
Mm-hmm.
Specifically, what do we do, how do we feel as parents when our teenagers / young adults make decisions we don't agree with? Mm-hmm. And I'm sure we could do like 8 or 9 episodes just on this one topic, but we're going to limit it to this one and just
can we make an agreement as a group? As a group,
sure.
Yeah.
That whatever issues we talk about, that we'd speak in vagues rather in very, very specifics.
Absolutely.
As this is available for free on the internet, anywhere podcasts are hosted.
Right.
Spotify, Apple, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Right. So just be careful about, yeah. about because one of the kids might hear us.
Well, and
go, why do you talk about me like that on the internet?
Well, I like to qualify it too, that we've done foster care and hosting for a bunch of teenagers as well. So it does, the teenager stories we have access to include children that do not currently live in our home.
Yeah, exactly.
I was going to say that you and your wife are surprisingly pleasant for somebody, for two people, that many teens and adults in the house. And
well, Carrie is away from them all right now, so that's why she's so pleasant.
I know, hey!
But like,
along with your naturally pleasant demeanor that we all know and love.
Nice save.
Thank you.
Nice save. Yes,
I have been married for quite a long time.
I know how this game's played.
That's right.
You know, and that they're always smiling. They don't appear to.
It's the Midwestern thing.
Oh, it's the Midwestern thing. Okay. but that's a real question, right? Because this idea that one day your children will turn 18, they'll go off to college, they'll graduate, they'll start a career, they'll get married, like that's not necessarily real for everybody listening to the sound of my voice, right? Yeah. That's one of the things that that we had to learn. Like our oldest son, I mean, for since the day he turned 12, he would say fairly regularly, "I'm leaving on my 18th birthday." And
like, you're still going to be in high school.
And Kayla would say, "You're still going to be in high school. You don't need to do that." That's all true. I would say sometimes you'll still be in high school, or sometimes I'll help you pack.
depending on the day.
Keeping it real.
Hour. Just kidding.
You know, it's interesting about that, though. Andy and Sandra Stanley had put a book out last year. I think it's just called Parenting. Mm. And he talks about the part of the tension between parents is that mom typically wants her kids to stay longer than they should.
Mm.
And dad wants them out before they're ready.
They're ready, yeah.
And he said, and that's part of what the two of them had to figure out in parenting together is figuring out how to meet in the middle between those two extremes. Now, moms, does that feel like an accurate statement to you?
I think so, because I think we don't ever think they're ready.
Mm.
Quite ready, right? Like, they still need us.
Yeah, I mean, to some degree, though, I mean, Will, you mentioned FASD earlier during the introductions and stuff. When you look at the data on that, I think the research says that 80% of FASD kids will never ever live fully independently.
Yeah,
there will be this. They'll do it for a bit. They'll come home. They'll have to have somebody with them, somebody taking care of them, help them manage their finances and stuff like that. And for a lot of the families that we work with, that's a real issue.
Yeah, that's
right.
That
and
is.
So
that is a real issue, and I think, and you can see that too in the kiddos kind of as they grow. We've had a couple of different ages and stages of FASD. We haven't raised one that's a full grown adult yet, but there is hope out there. The support groups and the learning we've done around that has talked a lot about a lot of those kiddos in their mid 20s really kind of take a positive turn in their ability to learn self-care and self-regulation and things like that allows them to live more independently. I don't know if it's completely, but it's more than just completely relying on you and living in one of your bedrooms.
Well, man, and even if we could fully embrace you more independently and the child is able to live outside of your home, I think like you're like somewhere in their mid-20s,
mm-hmm.
right? So it's always, it is, and I think that's one of the things, you know, we talk about having to accept certain things and mourn certain things. And one of the things you have to accept is that the kids are not leaving your house.
Yeah.
As soon as you think they are, or as soon as you go, like, you know, in my mental model is you graduate from high school, you go off to college, and you get going with life.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but that doesn't always happen.
It's an expectation adjustment.
Yes.
Well, and I think you know, talking about them making decisions that we don't agree with, we worry that they're going to make those decisions that we don't agree with even more if they're outside of our home.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Or if they're not where we have that close proximity to them, you know, where they're checking in regularly. We worry that they're going to make more, because we see, you know, I mean, in high school, they're starting to make decisions that are like, I don't know that that's the best idea. And I'll give you like a really a really simple one that actually turned out okay. But one of our kids the other day had a paper that was due for her English class. And she said to me, the day before, well, she'd actually gotten an extension on it. She'd had a really rough week and we'd had a pet die. And so we had like, you know, just a lot of stuff going on. So she asked her teacher for an extension. Her teacher gave her an extension. So it's the day before the paper's due. She's written the outline. She's started working on the paper, but it's just not really coming to her. And she wants to change the topic entirely, which means she has to go back and rewrite the outline, do all the pre-planning stuff, because the teacher requires every step to be turned in. It's not like you just turn in a paper. You have to turn in all the all the steps. And so I was like, honey, I said, if you're asking for my advice, that doesn't sound like a good idea. That sounds like you've got rehearsals tonight. So it's not like you have all afternoon mm-hmm. and all evening to do it. You have to leave the house by about 5:30 and it's 1 o'clock in the afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
And that paper's due tomorrow, which means you've got to make sure that by the time you get up in the morning, that paper is ready to go. And I said, it doesn't sound like a good idea. So she starts to tell me like, well, I think this, and I think—
One other caveat.
Yes.
Her laptop, her sister had bumped a bottle of, a glass of water over it, and it was currently not functioning. So she was stressed out about that too.
Yes, yes. So I say to her, I said, I don't think that's a great idea. But I'm not going to make that decision for you.
Mm.
This is your paper. I'm not going to tell you you can't rewrite it. I'm just going to tell you if you're asking for my advice, I don't think it's a good idea. And she goes, okay, can you print my outline? Because I need to get started on redoing the paper. And what I wanted to say was, why aren't you taking my advice? You came to me. You asked for my advice, and you're not taking it. But what I said was, sure, I can print it off for you, because her computer wasn't printing, right? So I print off her outline for her, and I don't say another word to her about it. And Ryan and I had a date scheduled. We were going out to lunch, and so we go off to lunch, and she's home working on her paper and doing all the stuff. And we come home from lunch, you know, an hour and a half later, and she comes running out to the car. And I was telling him at lunch about this whole conversation. And she comes running out to the car. And he goes, that's the face of a kid who's finished that paper already, Mom. And I was like, I think it is. And sure enough, she goes, I just finished my paper. Do you want to hear it? And I was like, yes.
Yeah.
Right? Because everything in me wanted to be like, you came to me. I gave you advice. Now follow my advice.
Mm-hmm.
But I was like, I'm just going to let her go with it. I'm just going to go, because I had someone say to me one time, which I think was really wise advice. She said, as they get into those teen and young adult years, you have to start giving advice when they ask for it. And just if they don't take it, or if they do something you don't think is great, I hope that works out for you.
Mm-hmm.
And then if and when it doesn't work out, you are there to catch them and comfort them and say, I'm so sorry that didn't work out for you. Not I told you so, not like, well, if you'd have listened to my advice, that wouldn't have happened. But it was just a perfect example of that actually working out really well. And she didn't follow my advice, but I was able to be happy for her in that moment because I wasn't mad that she didn't take my advice.
And what I hear in there is that you took her seriously and believed, I mean, like, let her run with that. And I think that's so important with our teens, because when we come and say, nope, I don't think you should do that, I think that's the wrong decision, and berate them and so on and so on, we're not giving them the message that what they have to say matters.
Yeah.
And they're going to put up a wall rather than say, hey, my mom and dad take me seriously. And I can share things with them, even if I just need to get it out of my system and believe, you know, that I could actually do it. And sometimes they talk themselves out of it.
Yes.
But I think there's a lot of lessons in that story. Number one, Jordan Peterson says that advice is what you give the moment you lose interest in listening to the person who's talking to you. I think he's absolutely right about that. It's how you say, look, I'm done. Here's some advice. But number two, we only ever give advice to people who disagree with us, particularly in the context of the children, right? You said, my advice would be not change your paper. She crushed it. And when she read that paper, it was really good. It was insightful, comparing Mr. Darcy to Barbie and and you know, the satire and all that kind of stuff. It was fantastic. I laughed. I thought it was insightful and all of those things. And it occurred to me when she was doing that paper to us, it's pretty arrogant to assume we're always right.
Mm.
The parents always assume we're right when we deal with our children, because you're like, well, no. Because what happens is then, because if she didn't get a turn in time, you'd have to fight the way you were fighting the urge to say, no, this is some advice, I'm experienced, you should do this. You'd have fought, see, I told you so.
Yeah.
Which mm-hmm. most of us would have done.
Yeah.
But
mm-hmm.
when our kids are right by getting counter to us, and by the way, she'll be 16 her next birthday, she's about to get a driver's license. The reality of her life is she does not have mommy and daddy telling her what to do. So we have to hone those skills that she actually can make decisions for herself,
mm-hmm.
and she can be supported if she fails, and she can be delighted in if she succeeds. But when you were talking, I thought that's typical of us parents, though, is we always assume, well, I'm giving you advice because I am right.
Right. Yep.
But that's not always true. We are not always right.
No, yeah. And she knew that the path that she was on wasn't giving, like, she wasn't getting the paper she wanted. And then another idea sparked, but she wanted to bounce it off somebody. But even then it was like, I really think I can do this. And I was like, okay, well then go for it. But you better get started because you don't have much time.
She came to me and said, I don't think mom's happy with me.
So it's like, hey, you got to do it. Just get started.
So another thing I like about that story there, Kayla, for the parents that would struggle in that moment, because I think there's a lot of parents listening, and I'm included in this list here, that in that moment would struggle to cheer her on and might just kind of shut it down, right?
Yeah,
for those parents, sure. For those parents, I'd like to kind of give the encouragement that my wife has given me before, is that if she gets a bad grade on one paper in high school, it's not the end of the world.
Come on now.
Right?
Yeah.
You know,
nobody's looking at that one paper you wrote, you know, when you were 15 years old
mm-hmm.
to determine your life. Yep.
Right? And so
no, that
go ahead.
No, go ahead. I cut you off from it. There's a little bit of latency, so I thought you were done. Go ahead, Will.
As much as we try to catastrophize every paper and every little situation like this, not all of them are that serious. You know, giving them the chance to fail in these situations where it will hurt, and you know, there will be consequences and results, and we have to help pick them up. It lets them have ownership in a situation that's not going to like wreck their entire life.
Yes.
So can I want to ask a question that may be controversial, but I'm okay with that.
Mm-hmm.
What happens if you give? I'm not asking any of you to confess to this. I'm just asking you, do you think this is hypothetically possible? What happens if you give your child advice? The kid, your daughter says, I don't like my paper. Because I like the way you said that, Kayla. She didn't get the paper she wanted. She wasn't pleased with the work. So number one, I think our responsibility is to rejoice with my kid who had enough self-awareness to say, this is not good. I must do something else. But we skipped that whole part,
ooh, yeah. Right?
Which is important because that's encouraging to her. But what happens if, though, is when she goes and says, and it's like, Mom, I hear advice. Can you just print me a fresh outline, please? When that moment happens, because I think somewhere inside of us, there's a little bit that hopes that they fail. Because if she fails, the hope is, well, she'll take my advice next time.
Well, counterpoint to that, because I was thinking about the whole failure thing a moment ago. I think one reason why we struggle with our responses to the decisions our kids make that we don't agree with is because we have a fear of failure of our children. I mean, that's the whole rise of the helicopter parent in the first place, right? We don't want our kids to fail. Mm-hmm. We want them to be successful. We want them to be more successful than we may have been, right?
Yeah.
And I think that's part of this, is that you were upset that she didn't take your advice because you're somewhere in your subconscious, it may not be even a conscious thought, you have a fear of her failing
right
at this particular task. And like what Will and Carrie Ann both just said about, you know, one paper is not the end of the world.
Yep.
We catastrophize everything, right?
Absolutely.
Okay. It may not be one paper that's the end of the world, but what if it's this? And then what if it's this? We have that snowball effect in our head, right?
Yep.
And that's that fear down the road, right? Mm-hmm. And so that's when you have to kind of dial back, like we've been talking about, that fear expectation.
I just want to say this. I think that part of that, though, ingrained in that, is the fear that you're going to be the only parent in your group of friends that doesn't have a straight A high school student.
Oh, preach it.
Is that what you were about to say by the look in your face?
No, but I was going to say, on Chris's point, is that you have to parent the kid that's in front of you, not the kid that you're afraid.
You're afraid he's going to be.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah. You can't future-proof the kids, no matter how hard you try. And that's not to say that you shouldn't parent well. Try your best to parent. That doesn't mean that you should try to protect your kids and guide your kids and offer advice. That's not what this is about. You should do all of those things. That's part of your job as a parent. What this is about when the kid doesn't take your advice or when the kid outside of your advice makes a choice. Let's say they get involved in a romantic relationship in high school with somebody that you can objectively see is bad for them because of the way they respond to them. Well, what do you do then?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm going to tell you what you do then.
It's trickier.
I'm going to tell you what you do then. You hope that you now look back at the entire time that kid is part of your family, whether it was from birth, 4 years old, 8 years old, whatever, and you hope you did the work back then so that today they might listen to your counsel, and if they don't listen to your counsel, they know that your home's a soft landing place for them when it predictably goes up in flames.
Yeah,
because that's because I've been there, and that's all you have in that moment is going, "Oh gosh, did I do enough to invest in this guy for the previous decade? Because it matters now. Because we talk about connection and stuff like they're nice ideas."
Mm.
Yeah,
but there will come a point when you have teenagers and young adults, and all of a sudden, it's going to really matter if you thought those nice ideas were worth putting into practice.
Yeah.
And so the way to do, in my opinion, is the way to react when kids do something that you don't agree with is to ask yourself, did I invest in this child enough over the previous decade or whatever amount of time that is?
Yeah.
That if this does go up in flames the way it looks like it will they still come back home and say, I need a place to come? Because one of the things we do in the catastrophizing, we go, oh, my kid was adopted at age 6. Everything is a potential disaster.
Mm.
But if the kid born to you dates somebody in high school that you don't agree with, you just hope they'll learn their lesson. Mm-hmm. But the kid who is adopted by you dates somebody you don't agree with in high school, it's the end of the world as we know it.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
But I don't feel fine.
I was just going to try to sing a bar, but yeah, I'll spare you.
Would you sing in any case?
Save that for the green room. We need some material there.
Oh my gosh. Well, then I think it's hard too when you have a kid who maybe you don't get as much time with. You know, you bring them home at an older age.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're like, I haven't had the time to invest.
I have to cram as much as possible in.
Yes. And I'm trying to. Right. So you've got, like, let's say you bring home a 14, 15 year old kid who's got the emotional maturity of a 5 year old, but the world looks at this child as a teenager.
Right.
And they have teenage friends and they do teenage things, but they don't make teenage decisions. They make 5 year old decisions.
Yes.
Yeah. I think that's the part where I feel like, oh my gosh, like, you know, should I give this kid a driver's license? Should I give this kid a, you know, should I allow them to do the teenage things knowing that they have 5 year old decision making powers?
Mm.
And where's that line? Like, how do I help them? You know, because if you bring home that older child, then you're like, I haven't had all the time to pour in everything I want.
Yeah.
But I also don't want them to feel this shame of like, because of my history, I don't get to go to the school dance or I don't get to hang out with my teenage friends like the other kids do. I'm treated like a baby or whatever. Like, I don't know. It just feels like there's no good response, you know?
Well, like you said, they are that chronological age, but because they're so much younger, they are more likely in some instances to not, you know, that your child, right? You know that they might make the decisions that you want to keep them safe.
Right.
But everybody, you know, in some of our cases, everybody at school just feels like they fit in with everyone else.
Mm. Yeah.
And that makes it even a harder level because you look like
the helicopter parent.
Yeah. You look like the terrible parent because you're saying, no, this is not developmentally appropriate for my child.
Yeah.
And everyone's like, well, they're this old. Of course they should do it. They shouldn't be excluded for that. And so there's that balance of being like, where do you stand up for it? And when do you go, okay, you know what? The risk is low. We're going to.
It's the invisible disability syndrome.
Absolutely. Yeah.
You can't see that this child is handicapped by developmentally. Mm-hmm. So therefore, you're just going, like you said, off that chronological age rather than their developmental.
Well, because your vision is your strongest sense, right? It's your dominant sense, right? I remember Gordon Ramsay saying one time how he was such a stickler for food coming out of the kitchen just looking gorgeous because you eat your food with your eyes first. Right.
Yeah.
And so like the flip of that is our almost 16 year old daughter is like 5'11". I think we measured her yesterday. She's 5'11". And so she's always been tall. And so when she has been the flip of that, when she was 10 years old and acted like a 10 year old, a lot of adults particularly would be annoyed by her because why would a 16 year old, because she clearly had to be 16. She was as tall as a 16 year old. Mm-hmm. And she really struggled with being viewed like that. And so, I mean, you can't like walk up with a card and saying, I'm 14 years old. Developmentally, I'm 8.
Yeah.
I mean, like there's no way to do that. But the truth of the matter is that our kids sometimes don't get included. And then if you're any form of a teenager, if you don't get included, it's the end of the world. And you'll oftentimes retreat, which is concerning, or you'll engage in fawn-like behavior and do what it go along to get along, mm-hmm. which is concerning too. You know, when you two ladies were talking a minute ago, I looked at the title, when teens/young adults make decisions we don't agree with, and I thought it should read, when teens/young adults make decisions we don't agree with, and the mothers of the other teenagers give us a hard time.
Oh.
But we'll leave that alone. We ain't got time to get into that.
No, it's true though. But I like what Carrie-Anne, like what you said, because you know, you said it's determining, it's finding the balance and determining the low risk situations. Yeah. Like where can I allow them to kind of fail in that and be like, you know, I hope that works out for you, mm-hmm. you know? And where do we have to intervene and say, that's not a good decision? Because based on their emotional maturity, you know that they can't be making that decision.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of everybody's got to know their kid. Whether the child was born to you or not, I mean, you can have an emotionally immature child that was born to you.
Yep. Yes.
At the same time as you can have an emotionally immature child that you have adopted or you're fostering. And so I think you can, if we can look at the kid in front of us and give them some flexibility to fail, mm-hmm. when it's safe and it's not going to be this total disaster, but also be there to catch them and without the shame and the, I told you so. And the, you know, if you just listened, cause that can be so easy to do.
Yeah.
I think we need to really double down on what you said though, because it's not living life at the extremes. I'm a helicopter parent. My kid can't go out of the house to whatever, dude.
Right. Do whatever you want to.
Right. I mean, there has to be a middle ground, because I would say that if the consequences of failing will be life altering for your child or another individual, then you should intervene.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Right. But so little, a large percentage of life is not catastrophic for everybody involved.
Right.
And those are the things we're talking about where, like, because what if you just pay attention to how much you try to control things? Like, who cares if they brush their teeth before they put their pajamas on? A lot of people. You know?
As it turns out.
Well.
I was telling people about an exchange I had with our 16-year, now almost 16-year-old daughter the other night, and she's a bit of a firecracker of a personality, as you guys all know, mm-hmm. and she just snapped her finger and stuck it in my face and said, "Be quiet, I'm talking."
Oh.
The week before the Super Bowl, so that's I think the Andy Reid thing occurred to me that we talked about on a previous episode, because I just took a deep breath and I said, "I will listen to you, but not if you speak to me that way."
Yeah.
So we drew a boundary, but we didn't react, because what I've had to do, I've had to recalibrate what disrespect looks like. Mm-hmm. So she just speaks her mind. I respond. We go our separate ways. 10 minutes later, she comes upstairs. I'm sitting working at the computer at our desk in our bedroom, and she just walks in, puts her head on my shoulder and goes, "Daddy, I'm so sorry. I was rude to you."
Aww.
And I said, "Thank you for your apology, sweetheart." She said, "Will you forgive me?" I said, "Every time. because I know who I'm dealing with.
Aww. Yeah.
You know, and I've told that story to people and they're like, how dare, I would never let my child. Okay, you're great. I love it. But the truth of the reality is I'm more concerned about the relationship with her. I'm more concerned about her understanding that when you do things that are wrong, you should go and make them right. And she did that unprompted. Mm-hmm. So when most people hear that story and go, how dare she speak to you like that? I'm like, oh my gosh, this kid apologized without me telling her she had to.
Mm. Right.
Because to me, that's the higher virtue here.
Oh, yeah.
Like if I got in my father's face, yes. You know, like so it feels like that's like a speck and a log issue over there.
Yeah.
And so I've just decided that's not disrespectful. I don't agree with it. We correct it. We set a boundary. You want to be heard? Great. I will listen to you if you don't talk to me like that.
Yeah.
Not you don't get to talk to daddy like that. That's commentary. But saying here's the deal. You talk to me like that again, I'm out. I'm not listening to you. And so she respects that boundary and then apologizes afterwards and I'm happy.
Sounds like you didn't overreact in that situation. And we also have the 8-year-old version. And
we have an 8-year-old fire.
We do. I wanted to jump in real quick to the idea because we've been talking about young teens, but jumping ahead a little bit to the young adult piece, especially when they no longer require your permission, air quotes, even if they live in your house. And what do you think are some strategies that we can use? Because we talked about one is taking them seriously and being willing to listen and hear them out. But, you know, as they get older, they're going to make more and more decisions. And it's tough.
And I think, Karen, I think part of that decision is almost, again, my experience as both once somebody who was 20 years old and parenting somebody who's that age, is that some of the decisions you make are designed to let your parents know that you don't need to check with them anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right. And so that sounds, whatever that sounds like.
It's testing boundaries.
It is. And it's a natural and necessary part of development.
Right.
The problem is that we're on the receiving end of the pushing back of the boundary. We don't like it.
So the pushing. Mm-hmm.
Right. We did the pushing when we were their age, but now we don't like it.
It was fine. Right. Now you don't like
it. You reversed the whip on us.
Right. Yeah. And I think we really just have to catch a breath. And I've said this many times before. The problem with most parents is none of us remember what it was like being that age. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think none of us remember was like being 20 years old, except when I think about it, I do. And as much trouble as my 21-year-old may have gotten in over the years and so many of the bad decisions and whatever, he's mostly in second place to his father in the results of all of that, right? And so we just have to have grace. And I think, you know, what we've learned, Carrie-Anne, is if they make enough bad decisions, if they know that no matter what they do, the door is always open.
Mm. Yeah.
Like you have, that has to be the message of your home. There's nothing you can do that will change the way I feel about you.
Especially when you have kids who have a fear of rejection or a fear that their parents aren't going to keep showing up, that they're going to one day do something that's bad enough that they're going to be cut off or they're going to be kicked out or they're going to be whatever. I think that makes it even more so. I mean, all of our kids need to know that the door is always open. But for those kids in particular, we have to keep not only just saying, hey, the door is always open, but pursuing them when they're running away from us.
Mm. Yeah.
Pursuing them when they are, you know, basically giving you the middle finger or like, you know, just saying, I don't need you. I don't want you in my life. And it's not personal. If we can just keep it reminding ourselves it's not personal and just keep pursuing that, I think one day they will see, look, even when I made decisions my parents didn't agree with, even when I did things that they didn't like, they were still there. And not only were they there, but they still were encouraging me and caring for me.
That's,
I think, the thing that we lose sight of as our kids get older, chronologically as well as developmentally.
Yeah.
Is that, if so one of the principles we've always operated by is, what is the need behind the behavior?
Yep.
Right? Which is really easy when that kid is 2 years old, 5 years old, right? Like, that's super easy. And a lot of times, if you have enough information, provided to you. If you have a child coming into your a home via foster care, you kind of have a general idea of what those behaviors driving those needs or what those needs are that's driving that behavior, right?
Yeah.
But as they get older, our thinking kind of gets away from that.
Yeah.
I mean,
you should just know better.
I'm just speaking from personal experience, right? Like,
right. Yep.
But
I've taught you better. You should know better.
Exactly. Don't do that. Right. You've been in my house X number of years. Yep. You know, we've talked about X number of things, right? Like, why is that decision that you made?
Yep.
Right.
And we're not thinking about why did they make that decision? What's right. the need that drove that decision in the no. first place?
Yeah. Well, and Kayla, one thing that you said, and I'm going to tie it in with one thing Ryan said, which was, you know, we sometimes forget what it's like to be that age, you know, if mm-hmm. we really think about it. But you're saying that those kids, they want to know that no matter what they do, mm-hmm. they are loved and that they're pursued. Mm-hmm. Well, if you're having a hard time put that in context of your kid, think of it in yourself. What yeah. do we want? We want people that are going to love us and accept even the hardest parts of us. Mm-hmm. And that's very rare. As adults, we learn to mask that and we learn to not show people those harder sides of ourselves for fear of rejection. Mm-hmm. Yep. But our kids, they don't know to do that yet.
That's true. That is true. Good.
And something else that Kayla said earlier that I really like that I think ties into all this too is this idea of when they fail of being the soft place for them to land. I think that mm-hmm. a piece of that for us to recognize as parents is that if they need to have some of those experiences where they do fail and they find out that we are a safe place to land. Because we can say that 100 times, but until they've actually made that big mistake and we've mm-hmm. received it with grace and we've picked them back up and we've helped them walk through that, they might not believe it deep down. But
yeah. Oh, that's true. Because the experience is so much more than just our words. I'm never going to leave you. I love you. You're always my kid. I'm always going to love you. And they're like, mm-hmm.
I've heard that before.
My history says something different. Yeah. So we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, that's not just insightful, but it certainly is biblical, right? Jesus said that wisdom was proved right by her actions.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Yeah. There is a connection between how you act and how people react to you. That's the point of loving your neighbor the way you love yourself. Because the proof that you love God is how you treat the people who live on, occupy the planet with you.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right. Even James, who shared a bedroom with Jesus growing up, said, hey, it's great. Somebody's hungry. What good is it to that person if you say, I'm going to pray for you, go and be well, unless you actually give them something to eat.
Right.
So there's, which was funny, we were talking with our 21-year-old son about this over coffee this morning. Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, right. But even the message of salvation is you can't work your way to heaven. I once said, you can't work your way to heaven, but you should work on your way to heaven.
Right.
you know what I mean? And because the kids aren't going to believe you to the point that's generally being made here, unless you actually do the thing you told them they were going to do. And then the bad news, parents, is they're not going to believe you then either. You're going to have to do it, right? My 16-year-old son has been with us for 12 years. The other day, we were doing something. I said, do you trust me? And he looked at me and said, I don't know.
Mm.
12 years. Right. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, we're making progress. It used to be no.
Yep.
You know,
it's better than no. Right.
I'm hoping before he's of drinking age that he says yes, but that's only 5 years in the future. So I don't know. But you have to show up every day, like the prodigal son story, right? The reason that the father is standing outside of his house looking down the road for his son the day his son chooses to return is because the father had been standing in the road every day since his son left,
mm-hmm. yes.
looking for his son
yes.
to return. He showed up every day.
Yep.
Yeah.
And I was going to say, can I get a witness? But Will, thank you for not making me ask. Okay.
Well, parents, I think the lesson there is show up every day and offer that soft place to land, because whether you like it or not, they're going to screw up, they're going to fail, and we just have to be there to catch them when they fall.
In the show notes, I'd have to have warning. Kayla says, give you the middle finger. Chris says, screw up. I mean, how rude do you two want to get? No, don't do it.
And on that happy note, thanks everyone for listening. Take care.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Empowered Parent Podcast. If you have any questions or topics you'd like us to discuss in the podcast, you can email us at podcast.onebighappyhome.com. Please like and share the podcast with your friends and family, and you can find us on your favorite social platforms by searching for One Big Happy Home. For our supporters, we have a special episode after the episode called The Green Room right after this, so keep on listening. If you'd like to become a supporter, you can visit podcast.onebighappyhome.com. Thanks for listening.